it's okay to make mistakes, and how do we talk about that? We're going to have emotional empathetic attunement misses, and that's part of our work. That's expected. And how do we navigate that? How do we bring it back to, tell me what was going on for you? I missed something. I want to get curious about this.
Welcome to Deconstructing Therapy, transforming therapy and the therapists who lead it. Let's deep dive into conversations, reshaping therapy into a powerful tool for healing, liberation, and systemic change. Join us as we challenge the status quo, reimagine care, and celebrate therapists breaking barriers. Let's transform therapy together. Today, I'm honored to welcome Ashwini Krishnakumar, licensed professional counselor, to this episode of the podcast. Ashwini is a clinician in private practice in the Chicago area, where she works with individuals ages 5 and up, couples, and families, offering a warm, supportive, and trauma-informed approach to care. Her work integrates emotionally focused therapy, experiential therapy, and behavioral therapy to empower her clients to find healing and deeper connections. Ashwini is particularly passionate about working with interracial and intercultural couples, helping them navigate the complexities of identity, relationships, and belonging. Outside of therapy, Ashwini is an advocate for inclusivity and social justice, weaving these values into her practice and personal life. Hi, Ashwini. I'm so happy to see you.
Yes, good to see you too, Alethea.
So we actually had a really good conversation on another podcast. My friend Asada was doing a podcast, and we both were honored guests there to talk about decolonization, which was a really good conversation. And it kind of spurred me to start conversations with other therapists and even, you know, to start this podcast on my own as well from some of those conversations. But I know after that conversation, we had talked one-on-one, and there was like, oh, I wish I had said this. I wish I had said that as well. The topic is just so big. And I was wondering for you, what stood out the most? What felt like the biggest piece you could really expand upon?
I think the theme that came up for me afterwards, having spoken to some friends that also listened to it, was like empathetic attunement, like how a therapist understands what emotion is showing up in the space and how that can be missed across the board. I think therapists are human, they make mistakes, and they're valuable. But I think cultural differences sometimes can create more empathetic attunement misses. And so how do we talk about that, or how do we get better attuning to our clients of different cultural backgrounds?
Again, attunement is just everything in session. Whenever I'm watching my tapes again for session, and it always comes to what did I do wrong, what happened, and it almost always comes down to there's some attunement miss. So for anyone who's not a clinician and maybe not familiar with that, can you first just explain what empathetic attunement is in general? And then maybe we can talk about it in a cultural lens.
So empathetic attunement is when a therapist understands what emotion is happening in the room for the client, and how do I, as the provider, make space for it, talk about it, label it for you, validate it, and acknowledge it when it's happening in the room.
So it's being able to catch that live emotion, whether you set it's explicit or not explicit, that ability to really pick up on that live emotion in the room. And that's how you know you're having a good therapeutic relationship, right? When you're having that attunement, you feel seen and heard.
Yeah.
That emotional experience. And when that's not felt or it's misattuned, you can feel it.
For sure. And we want that to happen more times than not when we feel attuned to our clients. Individualistic culture will say you protect your individual self, whereas in collective cultures, there's going to be an empathetic miss of, no, I don't want to end my relationship with a parent or a loved one.
And why is there that difference there? Why is the cost bigger, I guess, in South Asian culture, in collectivist cultures in general?
I think we need our community, right? Especially when the dominant culture takes up a lot of space, and that is what it is, and that's okay. But losing community also means losing identity or proximity to tradition. the cost is
high. We have a relational distress with somebody. If you're in the dominant culture, you can create a distance between you and the other person. You can still hold on to yourself and your identity. The sense of self can still stay intact, maybe even more so intact if you distance yourself from certain distresses.
And I'm not trying to invalidate loss in that situation either. There is going to be a component of grief and loss, but there is also a layer of a lack of access to other communal spaces, right? How many temples or mosques are there that you could transition to if you needed to? You have less options. So partly you have to learn to work with some of the distress given the minimal access to communal spaces or community spaces and cultural spaces. So setting a boundary, a hard boundary, may not be healthy for the client.
It can get so nuanced, right? There can be a South Asian family that maybe you do need a boundary. Maybe there is just additional toxicity and it's not just something that speaks to culture.
Mm-hmm.
There might be situations where, hey, we need to look at a third option here. How do you keep your integrity? How do you keep your identity and feel safe relationally, but not put such a hard boundary that the cost of it ends up being losing community, losing identity?
I think a lot of times in South Asian culture, people talk about weight and your body image as a way to like acknowledge you or greet you. I do believe more times than not when you hear elders say that or aunties say that, it's coming from a place of care and concern and observation. And sometimes it does hurt or it feels uncomfortable, which does not take away. Both of those things can coexist. Like someone is caring for you and making an observation about, are you okay?
Yep.
And that's part of being in high context culture versus low context culture. Just making statements about observations that are happening. High context cultures are cultures that view relationships and collective experiences over low context cultures. It's more individualistic. The context of what's happening relationally is just less.
Okay. And if you would put that into the example you gave about weight, and that's one I can relate to because that's how you grow up all the time, right? Every time you haven't seen anybody for a while, an auntie will be like, oh, you gained weight, or you're healthy, which often in South Asian culture means they think you're too big. And how is that normative because of the context culture, and how can that experience be different if you were viewing it without the culture?
It could be really offensive. It could be triggering for people, especially if there's body dysmorphia, any ED eating disorders or disordered eating. Absolutely. It could be painful. So does that mean I'm never going to go to gatherings or I'm never going to talk to this person? I don't know if that's possible and or healthy long-term for people. In this example, right? Let's say it's one of my aunts that says that, or a family friend that says that. That would mean I miss out on seeing family friends and cousins who I can relate to about cultural differences and culture clashes. So the cost, like you said, the cost and the risk of it is just greater.
Right.
And so what are different ways I can handle that? I could say, thank you for being observant. Thank you for caring for me. There's a way to maneuver conversations like that without being like, don't talk to me like that.
And again, the culture matters here, because if you can understand that this is just a cultural normative thing that happens, and it happens because in these cultures, it is normal to do that observational greeting.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's translating to is, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm checking in to see where everybody's at, where their health is at, and historically, to the way you look as a female matters on all of these other aspects. Are you going to be taken care of? Are you going to be a partner? Are you going to, like, there's just this normal scanning that happens in our cultures. And historically, it's like, are the women okay? If they're looking a certain way, if they're healthy, then they're going to be taken care of. They're going to find their partner. And that comes from generations.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a different intent.
It is very
important. Is everything, and you shouldn't worry about impact. But when you understand the context, it is going to adjust how you set that boundary. right? Mm-hmm. And if a clinician is hearing something like that, they're going to say, wow, this person is an outlier. How are they talking to you like that? You can remove this person, because if we were in a white space and somebody talked like that, it would be a whole other thing.
Right. Context matters.
Right. If we understand the intent and we understand how this is culturally normative, we can jump to the intent when we push back against it. Like, hey, mm-hmm. thanks for looking out for me. Thanks for, you're so observant. And then redirect the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And in our culture, the first thing you say when you get on the phone is like, how is your spouse? How are your children? We don't directly ask, how are you? We gauge how the people around you are doing to check in about how you're doing.
Again, so, the community. It's like, we know you're just a part of this whole.
Yeah.
So again, as a white clinician who might not know what's culturally normative, what's not, you might not even know where your blind spots are. How do you start addressing something like that?
Yeah, I think refocusing it to the client of like, what was that like for you? Instead of us putting the boundary onto the client.
That makes sense. So maybe it's when you are automatically thinking, oh, let me help this person set a boundary. Let me get, I feel a sense of outrage mm-hmm. for my client. I feel protective of my client, which is going to happen all the time.
Yeah, but that could be used in the space, right?
Yes.
In my culture, mm-hmm. that is considered offensive. Like, what was that like for you? It can be a conversation.
And just like if you're in the same culture as your client, that might just flow so seamlessly, right? I feel protective.
Yeah.
I feel a sense of outrage, and you're just attuned to that person's emotions because you're probably having the same emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So it can work, but it might cause that cultural attunement if it's for somebody else. So when a clinician feels themselves having a sense of outrage, having a sense of that protection and wanting to guide their client towards a boundary, that might be a cue for them to get curious instead. Like, I feel this. How is that like for you?
Yeah. It's a conversation. Again, it's making space for that potential attunement clash that's happening and just putting it all on the table, but still leaning in with curiosity for what's happening for the client.
We are needing to create more space in general, right? We're going to probably have to be slower. We're going to have to get more context a lot of times. We're going to have to lean into curiosity. Any other advice for clinicians who might be navigating the space?
It's okay to make mistakes. And how do we talk about that? Like I said at the beginning of this, like, we're going to have emotional empathetic attunement misses, and that's part of our work. That's expected. And how do we navigate that? And how do we bring it back to, tell me what was going on for you? I missed something. I want to get curious about this.
Any suggestions of work to do before you start working with certain clients?
I think being a therapist is, I think, a privilege and an honor to be able to hear someone's story and their experience and all the contextual things that come with that person. But if there is a level of objectification that is happening, or this like voyeuristic, ooh, I just want to learn about this person's culture, that is more self-serving than really trying to show up for the client, that's when I think harm can happen.
So it's either when you don't see the culture at all and you're treating everybody the same, or there's this kind of fascination and this voyeuristic. So it's really being honest with yourself and asking yourself,
yeah,
what are you stepping into this with?
Right.
And I asked you that question too, because you're saying it's okay, you're going to have mistakes, which is so, so valid. Rupture and repair is normal of any relationship, including a therapist and a client, no matter what culture, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to miss a tune. We just got to be able to repair it. But I do think there are certain circumstances where it's healthier to say, hey, I'm just not equipped to be a good therapist for you. I know I had a client recently who started interviewing. She had so many cultural misattunements that she made sure she got ahead of it and asked clinicians first if they were equipped to do that. And the clinician she went to before me straight up said, no, I'm not equipped to do this. And it was so refreshing and healing for her to hear a white clinician say, I'm not equipped to do this, but here's somebody that can serve you better.
Also, there are other clinicians of color around. Like, if you have friends that are clinicians of color, pass your client along. It's okay.
Right. So what's the line there? How do you know I can handle this? I'm able to do this. I just need to give myself permission to not be perfect with it. Or this person is better served by a person of color or somebody else.
I think that skill comes with time. I think really understanding that you're not truly listening to someone, but you're clouding your experience of how you're navigating someone because of the objectification or, I don't even know how to describe it.
It sounds like what you're getting at is you're touching on some places where harm is done, right? The objectification and the kind of being curious with this voyeuristic attitude or the complete blindness to culture. Right? Would you say those are some of the places that are propping up in your head?
Yeah.
Where the cultural injury comes? Yeah. And I think why you're getting stuck right now is the same reason I feel a little bit stuck too. Because if I'm putting myself in those shoes, it's when those cultural injuries happen, there's no awareness of it. Most of the time, you're not doing it from a malicious place.
No.
So how can a clinician themselves understand that those misses might be happening? That's a big question.
That is a big question.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable checking in with your clients on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis of how do you think this is going? How do you feel heard and understood? I know some clinicians do it after every session.
Yeah. Which I think is so valid.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what's coming up for me there is often they're not going to tell you.
I know.
I can't tell you how many clients I've had that have had cultural injuries from white clinicians and those clinicians have no clue. And even me personally, I've had injuries. And I honestly didn't realize fully. I just would feel the discomfort and then maybe it would come up for me later that it was a cultural misattunement.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then culturally, you feel, South Asian culture, we don't want to speak up to our authority, or you have a lot of internalized racism.
Sure.
Where you feel inferior to anyone in the white culture. So there's so many barriers to even being able to say, yes, I don't feel heard by you, or I feel missed by something you said. So I know we don't have all the answers here, but I think we are speaking. It gets very nuanced. It gets very complicated on a clinician with very great intention can create some cultural injuries without any intention and might not ever know that they're missing it. So, I mean, one thing that I always encourage is before you are stepping into this work and working with people of different cultures is start getting curious about your own culture.
Right.
And if you always have a culture, right? When you're in the dominant culture, you might not be aware of it because it just feels like this blank slate.
Totally. That makes sense.
Yeah. We're super aware of our culture because we're having to step in and inside and out of it.
Yes.
So we're almost like more aware, like everything you're saying, oh, this is a normal greeting that you have. They're more observational. We have a context culture. All this awareness that you have is because you're a first generation living in America.
Yeah.
Like someone who's swimming in that in India, Pakistan, like they wouldn't even have the awareness of what's normative or what's not because they're just swimming in that culture. So exactly. It's the same thing for somebody in a dominant culture. You don't know what is not normative in your culture when that's all you're experiencing.
Absolutely.
So can you spend some time in spaces where you are not the dominant culture? That is the best way for you to really understand yourself. Not so that you can understand the other culture and start being curious about it. Use those spaces and that environment to start being curious about yourself and your culture.
Yeah. As you get more nuanced in understanding your identity, you'll have more ability to understand nuances in other people across the board, regardless of cultural background.
Exactly. Because then you're walking into the room as, oh, we're two cultural beings with two different cultures, and we can be curious about each other.
Yes.
And I can be curious about myself. I can start being curious about other people. But if you're just this normative person and the other person is the one with the culture, you're already stepping into that room with a mismatch.
Right. You're accidentally othering.
And then that feeds into we're othering, we're being fascinated.
Yes.
From this voyeuristic attitude, we're projecting our own values on them. that it's kind of sets it up for all this agenda. Yeah, is there any courses or any clinicians that you know speak about this stuff that might be a good place for someone to start who's just curious?
Hopefully your grad schools are offering a program in diversity. I know my program did have that. There's a program called the DEAR Project. The program is called Beyond Fragility. And they do a really good job of helping white clinicians be more mindful of what's happening racially. And then also to like navigate discomfort around what do I say? What do I do when something's happening?
Wonderful. That sounds like a great resource. So I was also wondering a bit about your own journey with this. I know I've had my own kind of decolonization journey and kind of growing up here. Did you grow up in the States?
I did, yeah.
So, I mean, oftentimes people that I know, first generation, you kind of grow up with this more internalized sense of racism and then you kind of learn and grow. And would you mind speaking to your own evolution with this?
Yeah, I think I'm still on that journey. That looks different every day for me. I remember in our grad school program learning about diversity, and there's like a huge sense of grief that comes with it and like validation, but the validation that you are like, oh, this is not good, that this is actually a real thing, that racism is a thing. Like, it's not just, oh, this person's a jerk. Like, this person does not want you to have this same access to things that they do.
Okay. So it kind of put name to some of the experiences you were already feeling.
Absolutely.
And so that was validating, but then there's also that heaviness of, whoa, this is real.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was kind of like an awakening for you to get language to some of your experiences.
Yes. I think it's important to help label it and identify for clients as well as for myself of like, it's not me, because there is that experience of internalizing, oh, it's me, I'm different, I'm the problem. I think that's part of human nature. You either internalize stuff or you externalize stuff. So knowing how to do that dance of, okay, when is it me? I need to be accountable for something. And when is it something outside of me? And right. So that's something I continuously work on. But I think that's what I was learning. Like, oh, it's not me. This is the system I'm in. This is the community I'm in.
So how do we navigate that as clinicians, right? I mean, I think in school and in trainings and all that, we are often encouraged to go do the inner work, which is super helpful. That's where growth comes from, that introspection, that understanding where it's you, even when oftentimes we go outward, it's to mask something that we're not wanting to face inward, right? But that strategy that can be so helpful for growth can also cause harm when we are minimizing real external context, right? Systemic racism, systemic issues, generational trauma. When we are all going inward with all of that and not validating and really recognizing the external situation, we can cause harm. So how do you create that balance? Because you don't want to encourage people to go outward all the time with everything.
It's knowing yourself when you have the energy to rest, when you need to rest, and also knowing when you have the energy or the need to like speak out about something. Your comfort, like whose comfort are you protecting in that space?
Am I protecting myself or
other community groups or maybe the dominant culture?
So that's kind of where a little bit of the nuance comes. Like,
yeah.
When you're working with someone in the dominant culture, it's like, okay, what is this strategy coming from? Is this strategy coming from self-protection or to protect somebody else or somebody else's disappointment? And maybe in somebody who is in a person of color, there's the added question of, are you protecting community? Are you protecting tradition? Are you, and that'll open up a whole other conversation, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you protecting community? Are you protecting yourself?
And that's where that miss can happen, right? If you see it as, oh, you're just protecting somebody else's comfort, or you're not trying to have conflict, you're not trying to disappoint somebody else, that might lead you into encouraging your client to have a strict boundary. Mm-hmm. Versus if you can see that as, oh, wait, you're actually protecting your own sense of identity. You're actually protecting your relationship to community here. So now let's talk about some different things. How can we protect ourselves and our own integrity and also still not disassociate so much from this community and feel safe? And it might take a lot more conversation and working around, but it needs to be part of the equation.
My mind is going to, like, I think sometimes in the mental health world, we can unknowingly coddle someone's ego to the point where we're not really helping them. What you just said helped me kind of formulate that on how you're feeling this way. You're seeing this happen in this space with this auntie. What are you going to do for yourself in that moment? Is it like affirmation of like, I'm doing the best I know how, like, I love my body regardless of what other people are saying? Or is it like validation of like, yeah, the last couple of months have been rough and I haven't been taking care of my body, instead of externalizing it and making it about the auntie who's the problem? How do we navigate us in that moment and have a real conversation about ourselves in that moment?
So I think what you're bringing up is a really important topic, and what you're touching on is shame, basically. Right. Mm-hmm. And our relationship with shame. So often people in collectivist cultures, people in Eastern cultures are part of what we call shame honor societies, where the society is structured around those belief systems, and versus Western cultures are more of guilt and innocence society. So again, it's more about how society is kind of structured around those type of paradigms. But often we have more of a sense of shame. It helps us to stay within our community. It helps us keep honor of the community. It helps that unit in general to have those emotions. And shame can be very good. I know often it is labeled as just, it's a horrible thing. You need to just get rid of it. And guilt is okay. You know, that's just feeling bad about something that you did. But feeling shame is not often seen as helpful at all. And so often in mental health, we can see that play out, where if a client is touching on some shame in a good way, it can let that person have a cue of, this is something I need to actually change. I need mm-hmm. to actually change something about myself or how I'm operating in the world right now, because I touched on something big. Mm-hmm. But if you're uncomfortable with that emotion, and if a clinician's uncomfortable with that emotion, often a misattunement happens where they're going to throw compassion on that client, or they might encourage them to go outward, just like you're saying in this mm-hmm. example, right? Of like, oh, how dare they make you feel unhealthy about yourself, or that you don't look good, or there's something wrong. Right. Let's get mad at the auntie. Let's just feel good about ourselves. But there might be something real there, right? Mm-hmm. You might have hit a nerve of, I actually don't like the way I've been treating my body lately. And the auntie saying that, it just hit on a nerve, because there's already something there. Mm-hmm. And not that you should swim in low self-esteem or beat yourself up about it. That's not where we're going. But we don't need to go the other extreme either, where we're, hey, let's just hate on the auntie, say that we're wonderful. There is this in-between space of those two things if you can tolerate shame.
And also, we can't control other people.
Yes.
So how do we navigate that middle space?
I think it's saying, yeah, that made you feel uncomfortable.
Or it hurt.
And it hurt.
Tell me about that hurt. Like, whatever it is, it could have felt so many different things.
Mm-hmm. Did it touch on something real? Do you want to be taking better care of your body? Do you want to from an internal space? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You can still feel good about yourself and still want that change.
Yeah. Or it's a mask for something else emotionally that's happening as well. I didn't do well on an exam and I've been punishing myself.
Yeah, look at the richness that can come from being able to really sit in that. It's actually telling me there's more depression here. And you can miss that if you make it about the auntie. Mm-hmm. You can miss that if you're just going to try to prop somebody out of that hurt or bad feeling into just feeling better about themselves.
I'm actually thinking of a client who I'm like, I feel like we're not going deeper. And I think it's because of this. We keep focusing on the aunties. There's some discomfort in sitting with shame, probably, that we need to explore.
I mean, I think there's this delicate dance that you have to do back and forth. Because you don't want to invalidate that when you go into spaces, that whole thing with the auntie, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like when I, like in my late 20s and I wasn't married, it was like every wedding, everywhere you went to, why are you not married yet? Why are you not where you're supposed to be? And it's overwhelming and you don't get that in other cultures. So I would need a white clinician to validate that, yeah, that's hard. That's something that I, as a white clinician, don't have to experience, that level of shame from a community. Mm-hmm. And it's real and it's big. And it's not one you can leave because, like we said, the cost is too high. And also, what part of you feels bad that you're still single? Can we talk about your own feelings around this?
Right. Yeah. Navigating the interpersonal experience of it as well as the intrapersonal experience of it all.
So I know we've been talking about a lot of different aspects of this. It can feel very nuanced. I can see how it can feel even overwhelming, especially for white clinicians to maybe hear some of this and then feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't even be doing this work. What can we say as some nuggets of what you can take away from this? What's a benefit of doing this work?
I think sitting with shame, exploring your own experience with shame, letting yourself down, letting other people down. What does that look like, feel like? How have your cultural identities, whatever that may be, religious, maybe your community, regional experiences of what's okay or not okay, how has that been influenced by your shame? Or how does that influence your shame, I should say? Because it's universal when you look at it that way.
And there's a spectrum. I know I say, oh, Eastern cultures have this, Western cultures have this, but it is very much, and you might have a different experience than your neighbor. I know I grew up in New York, and now I'm in Alabama, and I can definitely see more of like a shame, honor type of environment here than
in Alabama.
In Alabama, 100%. Because there's more, it's a more community-based environment
that
resonates more with me, and it seems more similar to me here in my own like South Asian culture than I did with my white peers in New York. So it is different, and I will link in the show notes, there's this culture test that kind of tells you what percentage of shame honor you are, just to start getting to know your own culture. And that's where I tell people to start beginning. When they start feeling overwhelmed with some of this work, it's just get to know yourself, get to know your own culture, put yourself in spaces where you're not the dominant culture and just start getting curious about you. That feels like a much smaller lift than feeling like you have to understand every culture out there. Any other takeaways you have?
I want to see this website too and try it as well.
Try the test, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It is good. You should do it with your partner so you could see
what we both bring in.
Right.
Oh, this is good. Yeah. I'll have to give it a try. What I'm taking away is, I think, coming back to empathetic attunement, right? And how do we empathetically attune to shame? Because I think that shame is so culturally nuanced. You either are going to miss it or understand it based on your awareness of your cultural experiences with shame on all different levels and how different levels of society and systems influence your sense of shame. And right, and we also want to encourage clinicians from the dominant culture to be comfortable with shame so that they can go into having these conversations with their clients.
That's so true. There's so much in just shame.
So much there.
Yeah. So I think those are two kind of good takeaways. Get to know yourself, get to know your own culture, how that differs, and get to know what is your relationship with your own experience and emotion of shame. I think we're both part of the same peer group, and that leader of that peer group had said that once. She's like, you know, as Asians, like we have so much experience with shame.
Yeah.
Like our environments, our aunties, our elders are like shaming us all the time.
All the time. You have to learn to live with it.
We have to learn to live with it so we have a bigger tolerance for it.
Yeah.
Versus in Western culture, when shame hits them now, like especially with these cultural injuries, like that white fragility, because that shame hits and they don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts turning into all kinds of other action tendencies.
So yeah.
Can you get comfortable shame? Can you understand what your experience is? Can you understand what you do to jump out of your shame when you're uncomfortable with it?
And how to self-soothe? How do you manage that distress?
No, great, great questions. Well, this was a really good conversation.
Yes.
I always appreciate you. I hope we can continue.
Absolutely. I love these chats.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to give a shout out to, website, anywhere where people can find you if they want to learn more about you, your work you do?
People can find me. They can Google my name, Ashwini Krishnakumar, LCPC, Licensed Clinical Professional Counselor. Yeah, I know I did a shout out to the DEER Project. That's a great organization.
Sounds like a great resource. I'm going to go check it out. And so I'll link all this into the show notes, and I'll also put a link to the podcast that me and Ashwini were in earlier.
Yeah.
You guys can check that out as well. Well, take care.
Thank you.
Join the movement and keep the conversation going at deconstructingtherapy.com and follow us on Instagram at deconstructingtherapy.